On that note.
I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order, and we have a quorum to conduct business. Let the record reflect that time is currently 1:36 p.m. on Friday, April 6th. Present today, we have Representative Ortiz, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Wilson, Co-Chair Seaton, Representative Tilton, Representative Guttenberg, myself, Co-Chair Foster. Just a reminder, if folks could please mute their cell phones. And today in committee, we will have three bills, HB 217, which is raw milk sales, food exempt from regulations. And we also have HB 231, which is CFEC, board salary, staff classified service. And then also HB 299, extend alcoholic beverage control board. And it is my intent at the end of today to recess this meeting until 1 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday, April 7th, 2018, at 1 p.m. So with that, our first piece of legislation today is HB 217, which is raw milk sales. It's by Representative Tarr. And committee last year, this bill on March 28th. The committee does have one amendment before them. Ms. Rhodes is staff to Representative Tarr, and if you could put yourself on the record, and if there's anything that you would like to add before we proceed, please do so.
Thank you for the record. My name is Diana Rhodes. I'm staff to Representative Tarr, and I just want to highlight that the raw milk bill and food exempt from regs bill, House Bill 217, no longer has raw milk or food exempt from regs. We support the amendment today and apologize for Representative Tarr not being here today. She is currently in the Resources Committee.
Okay, thank you. Well, let's see. I would also like to recognize that we were joined at the start here by Representative Gren. And so with that, let's take a brief at ease. Thank you. I just also like to note that we're joined by Representative Pruitt. The sponsor of the amendment, Representative Guerra, is not here, and therefore we're trying to find him, but it sounds like another member of Finance may introduce the amendment. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number one.
And we have an objection. And I don't know if Representative Guttberger or Ms. Rhodes would like to speak to this.
I'm happy to speak to the amendment.
Thank you.
Discussed it briefly. Representative Tarr discussed it briefly. It was in a previous version of the bill. And
too late.
Basically,
your amendments.
Basically, there exists a 7% procurement preference that exists currently, and we wanted to provide flexibility for those agencies that did want to purchase Alaska-grown items, and this would allow them to spend up to 15% more on a product that is Alaska-grown.
Thank you, Ms. Rhodes. And the sponsor of the amendment is here. I'd like to recognize that we're just joined by Representative Vice Chair Guerra. Representative Guerra, if you would like to speak to your amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know how much of a discussion you've had on the amendment already. None?
We didn't like it.
Okay. Has it been moved?
Representative Guttenberg moved the amendment, and Ms. Rhodes gave a short introduction of the amendment, if you'd like to maybe clarify.
Thank you, through the chair. And I'm certainly very open to the sponsor's views on the amendment. The amendment sticks with the 7% local producers' preference. So we will still maintain the rule now that for fisheries products and agricultural products that are produced locally, they can charge 7% higher and still win in the procurement process. That's been the law for a long time. And then the question was, what about making it a 15% preference? And there was some concern that that might be too expensive for schools and some other entities that might be facing limited funds. So we went with, I think it was an earlier version of this bill that said it shall remain a 7% local preference to help local producers. But if a state or community entity like a school wants to go above that 7% to support a local producer, and we hope they would, they may add another 8% to the price and still be allowed to select that local product. The pro is that saves money for schools, other entities that are strapped for cash if they're not going to be forced to spend that extra 8%. The con is we're not so sure that we know that they would ever say, we'll pay 8% more on top of that for local dairy or local fisheries. So I guess my preference would be to hear the sponsor of the bill's view on that amendment. But I thought it struck a compromise. I just don't know if it's a compromise that hurts the bill.
Representative Guerra, Ms. Rhodes had said earlier before you came in that they were supportive of the amendment.
Why didn't you cut me off?
We enjoyed hearing you, your voice. We've got a question from Representative Wilson.
So my concern with this, I'm fine with the 7%, but, you know, without procurement here, what happens one time that somebody buys carrots and decides they'll go up to 12% versus buying the carrots from somewhere else, but then they have somebody else that's at 9%, but they don't want to buy that one? I mean, you're kind of taking something that has pretty strict rules and boxes around them, and now you're going to leave it up to each district to choose between 7 and 15%. And I'm not sure what that does with the procurement rules that we currently have and whether that could cause lawsuits or filed complaints, because it wouldn't be consistent anymore. Right now it's 7%. Anything over 7%, then if you've got somebody lower than the 7%, they would have to take the lower person. Now you're saying they could choose anywhere between 7 and 15%. So I just don't know how that would work.
Representative Guerra?
Yeah, through the chair, maybe I don't understand the question. I don't see any possibility for a lawsuit. The law will be, that, as it always has been, that there's a 7% local preference. And the law will be that nobody can sue a school district or any other entity if they decide to pay an additional 8% more. That will be the law. That will be concrete. there will be no chance for a lawsuit. So if local dairy costs 9% more, and the school district or the prison or the other state entity, they have to pay the 7% more. That's the law. And if they said we're willing to pay another 2%, we see a great future for this business that we're buying from. They're allowed to do that. There's no lawsuit.
Follow up. But there's two bidders to make this work. I mean, on a procurement. So basically, if I have somebody with milk that's not local, let's just say Washington, and they're actually, and then you have one from Alaska, and they both put their prices in, and Alaska can be up to 7% more and still win the bid. If they're at 9% over what it is in Washington, from my understanding, the procurement works, then they would have to take the school district or the prison, whoever it is, would have to take the milk from Washington because there's only a 7% addition to look at each one of those. But now you're saying by this bill, at least I think this was saying, is if the school district still decides that they want to do the 9%, which is even higher, they could say, well, we're sorry, Washington, you're lower. And even taking the 7% preference, you're still lower. But we want to pay the 9%, we're okay with the 9% and paying the higher portion of it. I'm pretty sure that breaks the way that procurement is done.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you. Hopefully I'm going to help Representative Garrett with this because I agree with what he's doing. You would have to, a municipality or a school district would have to put it in their procurement code because they can't just randomly change it based on at least this is how it's been done when I've been a part of the procurement processes, so far. They will have to have, as part of their procurement code, a standard. And that standard would say either it's at the 7% or it is at up to 15%. And they would have to take that. They would make that option, and they would put out their procurement based on that. They wouldn't decide based on kind of willy-nilly based on, okay, we've got three people, we're gonna decide now how to apply the procurement. If they did that, then yes, there would be availability of a lawsuit, but they can't do that. The municipality would have to put out their procurement rules at the beginning, and it would state what the rules are, and they would have to then, I would be applying based on the rules and that I would receive when I have gone out there and tried to bid. So it's something that comes beforehand. It's not something that can be dealt with in the middle of the procurement process. I hope that helps.
Representative Wilson and then Guttenberg.
So again, you know, is that what the state thinks that they're going to do? Because the state would still have a requirement for any of the state contracts, including corrections, any other places that they may have. So was that the intent of your amendment, that they pick a number between 7 and 15?
Representative Guerra.
The chair, the bidder is going to bid a price. If it's 8% more, the municipality or the school district or the state entity will be able to pay that extra 1%. They'll be allowed to. We already have rules for what happens if you have two sets of bids for milk. They're both at 7%, and then there are rules for deciding which ones qualify and which ones don't. Those rules will still remain in existence. This just gives the school or other entity the right to choose the local product if they wish, as long as it's not more than additional 8% more.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
If I understand you correctly, what you're saying, in the first round, when they both put their bids out, if with the 7% added, they would still be lower than the milk in Washington. And so they've won the bid based on the 7%. And now you're saying that if the school district or the state wants to pay 8% instead of the 7% that was bid, they could do that.
Yeah. Representative Gere?
Chair, no. I think that's where we have the confusion. If it's bid at 7%, the school district's taking it at 7%. The school district's they're not allowed, and they're not going to say, hey, you bid at 7% more, but I'm going to give you more money. That's not what this does. This is where the local dairy bids at 9% more. the school district says, well, you know, I don't have to accept that bid because I only have to pay 7% more. This is the qualifying offer at 7% more. Under the rules, at 7% more, this would win. But they're charging 9% more. We're okay with that. This wouldn't let the school district pay more than what the bid was for.
And I have one other question because that didn't make any sense, so I'll try something different.
Representative Wilson?
Also on page 2, at the bottom, section 9 on the amendment, page 2 over to page 3, where it says if something is going to be bought out of state, there looks like there may be additional paperwork that is having to put to say why they took the out-of-state versus in-state. Where would this paperwork go, and who is going to figure out what it looks like?
Representative Guerra.
Representative Wilson, you're saying page 2, lines 3 and 4?
Where it says, Mr. Chair, it says a solicitation for the purchase of agriculture or fisheries products must include written notice of the preference under this section, specify that agricultural products harvested in the state and fishery products harvested or processed within the jurisdiction of the state will be used where possible. Then if the state or school district that receives state money purchases agricultural products harvested outside the state or fishery products harvested or processed outside the jurisdiction of the state, the officer responsible for the purchase shall certify in writing the reasons that agricultural products harvested in the state or fisheries products harvested processed within the jurisdiction were not purchased. So that's a mandate, and I'm just trying to figure out when they certify this and do this paperwork, where's it going, and then what happens with it, or who has to justify that all the information is accurate.
Representative Guerra.
Chair, that's just a requirement that if you reject the local bidder, you just have to state why, and the reasons would be in the procurement code. I don't think that would be difficult.
Okay.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To my own amendment. So the language in the amendment consistently refers to municipality. And not until you get back into the bill on page 3 does it refer to school districts. Does the definition of municipality also cover school districts? Because not all school districts are affiliated with a municipality. We had the superintendent of the Yukon Koyukuk School District in here the other day. Well, she was online. That is a big chunk of the interior and I think some southeast communities and I think some maybe even southwest. So I'm just trying to make sure that the reference to the municipalities in one section covers everything besides the municipality, besides school districts, not just, the school districts inside of a municipality. So it covers all of them all the time. So if you have a school district that's not inside a municipality, that they're covered.
Representative Guerra.
Chair, I think that this amendment governs the same entities that the procurement code governs. So this amendment doesn't do anything to change that. Exactly what entities are covered, maybe the sponsor of the bill knows better, but it does not change the law on that. The same entities governed by the procurement code, whether this amendment passes or not, will be the same entities.
Ms. Rhodes, did you have any comments on that?
Thank you. That is correct. Through the chair, it doesn't change anything in procurement code, and it's school districts and municipalities that receive state money.
Thank you. I'm just checking.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions on the amendments? Seeing none, is the objection maintained?
Yes.
The objection is maintained. Would the secretary please call the roll?
Representative Kawasaki?
No.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Pruitt?
Yes.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative Tilton?
No.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Guerra?
Yes.
Representative Grin?
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes. And on a vote of 7 yeas to 3 nays, Amendment number 1.
That was wrong. I'm sorry. 8 yea, 3 nays.
And on a vote of 8 yeas to 3 nays, amendment number 1, which is 30-LS0593/T.2, has been adopted. So with that, if we could maybe have Vice Chair Guerra read the fiscal notes into the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 217, let's see, what version are we on, Mr. Chair?
We're on
T? Yes. House Bill 217 version T only has one fiscal note from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. The appropriation is agriculture. The allocation is agricultural development. It's OMB component 455. It reflects a cost of $5,000 and a change in revenue of $10,000 for FY 2019 through 2024.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Are there any questions also available regarding the fiscal note? For questions is Arthur Keyes, Director of the Division of Agriculture. And so any questions on the fiscal notes? Seeing no questions, are there any further questions on the bill itself? Seeing no questions, I would entertain a motion. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 217 version 30-LS0593/T as amended with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Thank you. Are there...
What zero fiscal? The attached fiscal note.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, HB 217 version 30-LS0593/T as amended is reported out from the House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes. Note. And so with that, let's take a brief at ease just to sign the report. House Finance back on record, 1:58 p.m. Our next piece of legislation is HB 231, which is CFEC, Board Salary Staff Classified Service, by House Rules, by request of the Governor. Committee last heard this bill on March 30th. The committee does have three amendments before them, and at this time I would like to have Sylvan Robb and CFEC Commissioner Fate Putman please come to the table. And if you could both put yourselves on the record, and if there is anything else that you would like to add prior to us going to the amendment process, if you would like to put yourselves on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Sylvan Robb. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Administration.
And for the record, Fate Putman, the Chair of the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission.
And is there any additional comments that you'd like to add? Otherwise, we'll go to amendments.
I think the amendments speak for themselves. Yeah.
Okay. Just want to give you the opportunity. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So with that, Representative Wilson, your first amendment.
Yes, I'd like to move amendment number 1.
And we have an objection, Representative Wilson.
So close. what this would do is this would not unionize those that are there. It would leave them in the same type of classification they have currently. And I want to thank whoever took the survey. And it appears that that is the will of those who are currently working there. That's all it does.
Okay. Do we have any questions on amendment number 1? Seeing no questions, is the objection maintained?
I'll remove my objection.
The objection has been removed. And so with that, amendment number 1 to HB 231 has been adopted, and that is 0.1. So we'll move over to amendment number 2. And I will move amendment number 2.
Object to discussion.
And we have an objection. And so this language was brought to me by the administration. Ms. Robb or Mr. Putman, if you could please explain amendment number two.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number two, as I mentioned when we were here last week, one of the main things this bill does is to decrease the number of commissioners at CFEC from 3 to 2, and that was missed in one place. Sorry. And so this, my apologies, and so this amendment just corrects that and changes the number of commissioners from 3 to 2 so that it matches the rest of the bill.
Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, is the objection maintained?
No, I remove my objection.
The objection is removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, amendment number 2, which is 0.5, has been adopted. And let's move over to amendment number 3, and I will move amendment number 3.
Object for discussion.
And there's an objection. And again, I believe Ms. Robb or Mr. Putman, if you could explain amendment number 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number 3 provides clarification to make it clear that when there's a vacancy among one of the two commissioners that would exist under this bill, that one commissioner may take action, but to clarify that in the case where there are two commissioners, one commissioner may not act alone.
Okay, is the objection maintained?
No, my objection is removed.
Objections removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, amendment number 3, which is 0.4 for HB 231, has been adopted. And are there any further amendments? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make a conceptual amendment on page 2, line 12 and 13, and I'd like to make that those ranges to be 25, so that would be an equal range for new commissioners when they would come on.
So just for clarification, Representative Seaton, this would not change the pay ranges for the current commissioners, but for future, the next commissioners, should either one of them resign, move on, it would just apply to the future, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair, and the reason for it, it's always been a kind of equal job on the commissioners. They were equal pay, and this would take it to range 25. Within the legislature, we have some staff that are range 24. I believe the commissioner should be somewhat higher, but a range 27 is $40,000 more than a range 24. That's, I think, discriminating between commissioners that exercise the same duties is too broad a range. So I think that they should be equal in pay, and I think that should be slightly above where we allow legislative staff to be, which is range 24.
Object for further discussion.
Okay, there is an objection. And if I could maybe get a comment from either Mr. Putman or Ms. Robb, and then we'll go to questions of the committee.
Just clarification. If I can ask, make sure that we're very clear so that they can then answer. He's on line 12, the member is looking to strike 27 and change that to 25, and then on line 13 to strike 24 and turn that to 25. Is that how I understand what your conceptual amendment is?
That is a conceptual amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Ms. Robb?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We don't have an objection to the commissioners being at the same range.
Thank you. And Representative Wilson?
I remove my objection.
Okay, thank you. The objection has been removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, conceptual amendments number 4 has been adopted. And so with that, are there any further questions on the bill? And if not, we'll go to the fiscal notes. Any further questions?
Chair.
Representative Guttenberg?
Mr. Chair, I didn't object to the motion to keep the First Amendment, to keep them, as far as classified employees, where they were status. But we have a letter from Mr. Gao, and we have an email with a survey. And I'm not doubting the validity of it, but it's difficult to see documents like this that aren't, that might not be valid, that might be done in a way to give the body the wrong impression. I mean, we have about 15 to 20 signatures here. I'm just concerned that we start getting things like this that aren't, don't have a notary on it or something like that that establishes that it's something that's real. You know, theoretically, one person could have done it and put it in. We should just pay more attention and making sure that something is as it's represented in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. Are there any questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, Vice Chair Guerra, could you walk the committee through the fiscal notes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For House Bill 231, there's one fiscal note. It's OMB component 471, and for the reduction in staff, there's a savings in year one of $187,000 in designated general funds. That savings is projected to extend out to the year 2022, and then starting in 2023, it's estimated that that savings will be about $228,800. It's for one lost position. I'm not positive the full impact of the amendment, but I think there will be a forthcoming fiscal note on that.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions on the fiscal notes? Representative Wilson?
So, I guess my question just is, and Representative Garrett kind of said it well, this bill move with the forthcoming fiscal note to reflect the changes of the 25 range being for both positions. That's a question to you.
Brief it is. House Finance back on record, and very good point, Representative Wilson. Thank you. Are there any other questions on the fiscal notes? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill number 231, version 30GH1053/O from House Finance Committee as amended with individual recommendations and forthcoming fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, HB 231, version 30-GH1053/O, as amended, is reported out from House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and the attached forthcoming fiscal note. And with that, let's take a brief at ease.
there's at least a lot more money.
Yeah, no, it's surplus. Okay, and our next item up today is HB 299. It's extending the Alcohol Beverage Control Board by Representative Wool, and the committee last heard this bill February 20th, 2018. Committee does have three amendments before them. And at this time, if Representative Wool and his aide, Laura Steidolf, could come to the table and put yourselves on the record. And if there is anything else that you would like to add before we go to the amendment process, please do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Co-Chair Seaton, and members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Representative Adam Wolf from District 5 in Fairbanks. I have with me my legislative aide, Laura Steidolf, and I am ready to go into amendments if there are no questions about the underlying bill that we heard already.
Great, thank you. Okay, and also available for questions are Commissioner Navarre from BCCPD and Erica McConnell from the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, as well as Chris Curtis from Legislative Audit. And so let's see here. Let's take a brief at ease. House Finance back on record. We've got Commissioner Navarre up here. Commissioner, if you could also put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm Mike Navarre, Commissioner Designee for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
Thank you. And I just wanted to make sure you, I think it sounds like you have seen the amendment package, correct?
I have a copy of the amendments, yes.
Okay. And it looks like I've got a question here. Commissioner, would the amendments expanding the department's role as a regulatory and a quasi-judicial agency over the ABC board's decisions, would that add additional costs to the department?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think I would have to defer for now answering that question. It's really going to be a matter of exactly how many of them end up being appealed. And I think that it really should be limited because of the way the amendment is written, so that it is a appeal based on the decision of the board, and it's just a review whether or not it was consistent with law.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions of anybody before we go to the amendments? No? Okay. Thank you. So with that, by request of the sponsor, I will move amendment number one.
Object for discussion.
And we have an objection. Representative Wool, if you could explain amendment number one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the reason for amendment number one basically is to give an appeal provision to the commissioner of the Department of DCCED. And as was stated in the previous testimony about the ABC board extension, the ABC has resided in different departments, one-time revenue, public safety, and now in commerce. And the last move from public safety to commerce was an effort, I believe, to make the ABC board more receptive to business and commerce and less like a law enforcement division, but more like a commerce. And this amendment will give the Department of Commerce some a connection to the ABC board, whereas now they're in that department for administrative purposes only. There's no real connection other than that. So this would provide an appeal process. So if a board makes a decision, the person or persons or entity could appeal to the commissioner before they then, and previously they'd have to go to the state superior court. This would give another step in between there that wouldn't involve courts, lawyers, and all the other complications that go along with that.
Thank you. Do we have any questions on the amendments? Representative Guttenberg, and then Pruitt, and then Kawasaki.
So I'm just seeing this for the first time, so I'm walking through it. The board makes a decision and it's appealed. Who is it appealed to? Back to the board? And then if I just finish my, so if it appeals back to the board and it's still an adversarial decision for one party, just walk me through the steps after that. I mean, you get to the Superior Court, is it the board to the degree of person to the board, back to the board? Or is there an administrative law judge in the middle there? Or where does it, the steps before it leaves the department?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg. Currently, you can appeal to the board. But if you get to a point where you feel that another appeal is needed, this would put the Department of Commerce as the next adjudicating body before you go to state court. If my if Laura has something to add to that.
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, and this is actually considered a reconsideration process versus an appeals process. Right. So what would happen is the board makes a decision. The party that it made the decision against or for can then make a motion for reconsideration to the commissioner. Then they have 30 days to do that. And then from that 30 days forward, the commissioner has to use whichever evidence which was presented to the board to make his decision. And then if that decision, then that can go into an appeals process to the Superior Court.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow up?
Follow up?
So I'm just trying to, the board makes an decision. It's appealed back to the board. The board reaffirms his decision. It goes to the commissioner. What process does the commissioner has? Is it administrative law judge? Is it just a review just on the facts? Or what is it compared to the situation of the case? And then I understand that it can go to the Superior Court. But what is the process under the commissioner's purview?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair. This is similar to a few other statutes, AS 1411-016, which is when school districts can request decisions of a department that the department made. Also, AS 1920-015, when a municipality can request reconsideration to the DOT commissioner regarding local control of state transportation corridors. And it isn't, I believe you stated, the party can appeal back to the board, and actually this is after the board has made their decision, then they ask the commissioner for reconsideration, and then all the information, as I stated, is given to the commissioner, who goes through the process of, it's more of an informal appeals process.
If I may, to the commissioner, when this comes before you, what is, you're reviewing it under what criteria? Do you give it to an administrative law judge for review to give you a an opinion? Is there a hearing held? How does it get to you, and what is your process?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg. You know, I think that the appeal process is based on the record of decision before the board. And whether or not it's consistent with law. And so it would really be just another set of eyes on the final decision before the next opportunity to avail someone of an appeal would be to the Superior Court. And its timeline that's in place is, I guess, quicker, at least the way that I read the amendment, than either the Superior Court decision, which is still available, as you said, But it would be with assistance, I think, from the Department of Law to the department, but a review by the commissioner of the record of decision and consistency with law.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If I may add, Mr. Chair, thank you. A lot of these entities that would be appealing, and we have in the bill packet a letter, an exchange from Alaska Airlines, which is an example. A lot of these entities may not be as well-heeled as Alaska Airlines. And a small business that may be under a board decision that doesn't go their way or affects their business in an adverse way may not have a lot of time to drag this out in court with lawyers, et cetera. They need to keep their doors open, keep their lights on, et cetera, keep their employees employed. So I think it's my interpretation that the Department of Commerce will have these kinds of things in mind as well, is to keeping businesses open, following the law, of course, but giving that set of eyes on it, I think, is important.
Commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not supposed to do this, but in thinking through this particular issue, what you have is a board. You know, there have been some frustrations. I'm new to this position as commissioner. There have been some frustrations because it's a division within my department that I really have no authority to administer. And we have been having internal discussions with the director of the division about how we facilitate a process in order to allow for some input into the administration of the department. And in this case, what you have is a decision by the board, who also has the administrative authority over the division that is regulating and enforcing the alcohol laws. This would just elevate it to an additional entity in the commissioner's department to take a second look at the particulars of the decision before you get to the more expensive process, which is litigation. And, Mr. Chairman, if I could respond again to the question as to whether or not these amendments would have fiscal impact, I think that they would not, as currently written, if there were a significant numbers of appeals, and we won't know that until and if the amendments and the law changes, the statutory changes pass, it would be brought up and identified in future budget deliberations before the legislature.
Thank you. And Representative Guttenberg, is that?
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. I think we all recognize that there are boards and commissions out there that are in departments that act independently, that sometimes we wonder where the adult supervision is. So it is, I think it's appropriate to have that step in the department, but before the courts, for people involved in these businesses that are oversight, that there is another step in there, and I support the amendment.
Thank you. Next up, we've got Representative Pruitt, and then Kawasaki, and then Seaton. Representative Pruitt. Okay. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. And just to clarify, you were really talking about Amendment Number 1, 2, and 3 as a package, but they're separated out. I think that's
through the chair, Representative Kawasaki. The amendments are do have a relationship to each other for sure. So, and that's why the letter I gave kind of relates to all of them. I think the third amendment more just is the result of the first amendment.
Okay. With that clarified, I had more questions about Amendment Number 2. I guess just policy-wise, we're going down this route. I just had a question, much in the same vein that Representative Guttenberg had. So, I mean, essentially what it looks like in this case is that the commissioner, after reconsideration is given, the commissioner will have this board decision before it, and the commissioner will have some sort of a veto power, being able to affirm, modify, or reverse the decision. Is that how it looks like to you, Commissioner? Or is that sort of the idea, maybe, for the sponsor of the amendment?
I was reading when you were
So
you're asking if there's, I'm sorry, through the chair, Representative Carlson.
Let me just re-ask the question. Basically, what it looks like is, you know, so the board comes up with a decision. The board comes up with a decision. The decision is something that the aggrieved party doesn't like. They can ask for reconsideration directly to the commissioner, and the commissioner has some ultimate power in basically saying, no, board, you were wrong, or essentially vetoing what the board had done.
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, yes. If the commissioner can't overturn the decision, then I think the appeal or the reconsideration would be futile. But the point is to get another perspective on it and come to a different decision if needed, if that's determined.
So follow up. So just reading, it's in amendment number two, and I know all these are sort of interrelated. So in amendment number two, I hate to speak to the amendment that hasn't been moved, but the last line 19, 20, and 21 lay out sort of the that decision point in which the commissioner will make the decision, either affirming or reversing the, I mean, basically having some sort of ability to exercise veto over the board's decision. And that's really my question, is that the power that the commissioner will have?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, I'm looking at, I don't have, that's the second page of amendment number one, it looks like, not amendment number two.
No.
Take a brief at ease. Okay, House Finance is back on record. So we just had to straighten out which amendment was which here. And I believe, did we leave off at Representative Kawasaki or Representative Wolf?
I think thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we were waiting for an answer now that we figured out the amendment.
We are on amendment number one. This question was on amendment number two.
It is. Okay.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki.
But amendment number one is before you.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's stick to amendment number one.
Okay.
So we can come back to that question once we get to amendment number two.
Yeah.
So with that, any further questions on amendment number one? We do have Representative Sith. Do you have a?
Yeah. Yes, I do. Now that I'm sure that we're talking about amendment number one.
Okay. Actually, if I could, I'll just follow the list here. I think Representative Kawasaki is done. Okay. And so it's Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it was kind of confusing because on amendment number one, we have relating to the application of precedent to decisions of the Alcohol Control Board.
Yes.
And we're repealing a section, which is AS 0411 537, and which we really don't have here, but we do have a legal services opinion that is talking about that and saying that no other board has that same criteria. So can you explain, if we repeal 537, what is going to be the effect of that?
Representative Seaton, through the chair. Basically, the removal of precedent that currently, this would require them to apply precedent, and no other board has this removal of precedent clause phrase in it, including the marijuana board. So it's unique to the alcohol board, and it doesn't say that if they did something a certain way in the past, they have to do it that way in the future. That's not what it says. It just says it can be considered in a decision. And what's happening is, the Alaska Airlines letter basically is in your packet, which is the way they were renewing their licenses for a long time was they were submitting the fingerprints for background check of the president, treasurer, secretary, and about four corporate officers. And then this year, the ABC board said, we want all 22 of your vice presidents to submit fingerprints. And Alaska Airlines responded and said, first of all, our vice presidents change a lot. It's cumbersome. And in the past, we've done it a certain way. And the letter says, well, I'm sorry, according to law, you have to do it this way. And I'm not taking a position on that decision, but I'm just saying, precedent has some bearing on some of this stuff. So, and that's where maybe they could have adjudicated to the commissioner and said, what do you think? But I'm not here trying to make any decisions, but I'm just showing that precedent should be considered and not eliminated. And since no other board has this power, including the marijuana board, I feel it's consistent. And also the opinion from Ledge Legal was that it could be a problem in due process as well. So I think it's prudent to get rid of it.
Follow up?
So I think I'm understanding this, that legal says it could be a due process problem the way it is right now, and that repealing 537 will be beneficial in two ways, probably one in that on any appeals or to the courts, they'll have before them the documentation that the alcohol board considered past precedent, and so those things would be in front of them as facts as well, and then also that we wouldn't have the due process problem. Is that correct?
Correct, Representative Seaton, through the chair, and also that it's consistent with how we do all of our other boards.
Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Guerra and then Pruitt.
Thanks, Chair. We're on amendment number two, right?
No.
Okay, forget it.
Representative Pruitt?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I don't know if I'm the only one, but I don't have the letter from Alaska Airlines in my packet, and I don't know if maybe others don't have that. Yeah, I don't have it. So I guess, but my question is I think now that we're talking about it, I think I understand kind of the concept here. Are there other examples beyond Alaska Airlines where we've had concerns of the board not considering precedent? And I guess the point that Legal Services is highlighting is that this is opening us up to potential litigation, and therefore I think why this is in front of us. Is there other instances where we have this concern?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair. Well, the other example, I guess, would be another bill that I believe came through this committee, which dealt with the beverage tourism BDLs, or what I was calling the roadhouse licenses, that were being renewed consistently for 25 years. And then the law was further scrutinized, and it was determined that, no, in fact, the law requires you to have 40 or 50 rooms or whatever. And these license owners are saying, hey, we've been doing this way for 25 years. Again, I'm not saying that should determine the outcome, but that should be taken into consideration. So that's the only other example that comes to mind off the top of my head. There may be others, but, you know, it would be as if a license holder noticed a business across town doing a certain activity under the rights of their license, and they say, well, they're doing that, I'd like to do that too. And they could say, well, I'm sorry, you can't, but, you know, you're allowing it in this circumstance. So I just feel that that should also be considered. It shouldn't just be automatically waived because they don't take precedent into consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So will we see language in a different amendment that will still take up the part in 04-11-537, which we're repealing, that talks about in determining whether issuance, renewal, transfer, relocation, suspension, or revocation of a license is to be in the best interest of the public? Because that's what we're deleting out of law.
That's... I'd have to... Representative, give me a moment to check that language here. One second.
Take a brief ease.
Brief ease, yeah.
Okay, House Finance back on record. Commissioner Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wilson, that is specific to the application of precedent. The protection of the public is already in several sections of Title IV when issuing the licenses and the action that the board and division take. This is just specific to the application of precedent. That language is renewed multiple times within the statutes.
Follow up. But that's what we're talking about. I mean, that's what we're changing here. We're inserting relating to the application of precedent. So we're still in that section. And so if this were to pass, that wording doesn't need to be part of the precedent section anymore. Is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the removal is the removal of the application of precedent, and it says what that application of precedent applies to. There, that these provisions are elsewhere in statute too, in other sections, but that's as to where precedent applies to it.
So follow up?
Follow up.
So we're not setting precedents anymore? I mean, I thought that's what we're doing by inserting. So I guess this issue, maybe my problem is the same thing everybody else has been having issues with, is that until we get to 2 and 3, will it actually talk about why we're inserting this at the beginning?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, yes. The amendments are related, for sure. And the application of precedent or removal, basically this says, you just read it, so... the board need not confirm or to be distinguished its decision from any action as taken in the past. So I think that's unique to the alcohol board, and I don't, you know, for a lot of reasons, I don't think it should be there. So, and these other decisions, and I said the Alaska Airlines one is an example. Also, the appeal process and the third part, the third amendment, is more of a technicality based on the appeal process. But yeah, I mean, one and two are related.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Wilson.
So I agree with you on the repeal portion of it because the second half of this talks about that they don't take, they don't have to look at what they did in the past. All they have to do is look at whatever comes before them,
right
here and right now. And so if you could just get it to us, I'm not going to hold the bill up or anything, but where else maybe in statute, I just want to make sure, and maybe the auditor can answer, I just want to make sure that we know that the applications, you know, have to be in the best interest of the public. So that's the only portion, just that first sentence. I want to make sure that that's still what is important. I don't have any problems with the next part of it being repealed. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. And either Ledge Legal can confirm, or I can find where else it is in statute. But yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Next up, Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the alcohol chapter of the statute has a number of rules on whether you issue a license, whether you revoke a license, whether you suspend a license, what the enforcement is for any of those things, what some of the costs are. All of those rules still apply, and you apply those rules based on the facts of the case. So even though we're repealing this part that says you don't have to follow precedent, you should follow the facts in the case, that already exists in all those other statutes. Every statute that says these are the rules implicitly say based on the facts of the case. So if you violate these rules, we'll take a look at the facts of the case. I don't think the fact that we're taking out this thing that says the special rule on precedent that has existed at the ABC board, which I think is wrong also, just because you're getting rid of that and the part of and the clause that says but it should be based on the facts of the case, the but it should be based on the facts of the case is in all those other statutes implicitly, if not expressly. That's how the statutes work. If you lose your license for rule A, B, C, or D, you look at the facts of the case and you determine whether somebody should lose their license or get a license or have a revocation. So I'm not concerned at all those rules are not there already. They have to be implicitly. They are.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Representative Grant, did you have one, or were you okay? Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know if Ms. Bruce is online, or maybe Representative Wool could add some clarity to this. So the last sentence in the legal opinion: it is my opinion that this language could present due process and equal protection problems by treating similarly situated licenses differently. Is she referring to as the statute stands now with 3537 or taking it out? Because I'm looking for the clarity and the simplest way down the path that creates the least conflict.
Thank you, Representative Guttenberg, through the chair. She's talking about if it's not repealed.
If it's not repealed. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kawasaki?
Oh, no, I don't think I really have other comments. I think it's embedded in the statutes and licensing. In fact, in the same section, it talks about board-imposed conditions or restrictions. In 395, it says the board may, in the best interest of the public, impose conditions and restrictions on a licensee. So I think it's probably embedded within the licensing part, the zoning part. It's just the only thing it has to do with now is the precedent, and I'm comfortable with the amendment now.
Thank you, Representative Kawasaki. Do we have any further questions on amendment number one, which is J.2?
Representative Wool? Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this goes to Representative Wilson's question, section 04-11-330. Denial of license or permit renewal. An applicant requesting renewal of a license shall be denied if, one, the board finds after review of all relevant information that renewal of the license would not be in the best interest of the public, et cetera, et cetera. So,
thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, is the objection on amendment number one maintained?
No, I remove my objection.
And the objection is removed. So Amendment number one, which is 30-LS1281/J.2, has been adopted. And I will move amendment number two by request of the sponsor.
Object.
And we have an objection. Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This one, formerly amendment number one, now amendment number two, discusses the appeal process and the reconsideration process to the department prior to going to state superior court, but post ABC board decision.
Okay. Representative Kawasaki and then Wilson.
Okay, now that we're on amendment number two. Amendment, so, I mean, basically my question was is the same, that it says on line 19 and 20, it outlines that the commissioner shall issue a written decision affirming, modifying, or reversing the board's decision within those 30 days after receiving a request from the aggrieved party. So my question is that ultimately, does that look like a veto power by a commissioner?
Commissioner Navarro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, I guess I would see it as a review of the decision. Is it a veto power of the board? No, because it's got to be based on the record before the board and whether the board's decision is supported by substantial evidence and it and whether or not it's contrary to law. So I think it's only in specific purposes. It's another set of eyes before it goes to an appeal before the courts.
And then follow up.
Representative Kawasaki.
And so there's one issue that's been bubbling up for a while, dealing specifically with the ABC board's determination on distilleries and what constitutes a mixed drink. And I'm sure everybody here knows the issues surrounding that. Of course, there was just recently news saying that ABC had done that action. There was an error, anyways, for that action. It has to come before the board at a future date. So my question is, since the board came to that decision back in February when they were here, and there was information that was not given to the board members for consideration, would you have any capacity to get any additional information in between the time in which that time happened and the board rendered their decision?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, I would have to run that by legal, but I think it would have to be based on the record of decision that was and information before the board, not based on new information.
So it's a legal, through the chair, I guess it's a legal question then.
And just FYI, Linda Bruce has just joined us, Legislative Legal Services. Did you want her to?
Sure.
Ms. Linda Bruce, if you're there, can you put yourself on the record?
For the record, this is Linda Bruce with Legislative Legal Services.
Thank you. And did you hear Representative Kawasaki's question?
No, I did not. Could you please repeat it?
Thank you for being here, Ms. Bruce. My question dealt with the case of the distillers earlier this year, in which the board on a, I think it was a 2-2 vote, because one had to recuse themselves, say that mixed drinks, essentially they would not be allowed to mix drinks within their facilities. So the question was, would a commissioner have an ability to veto that decision or get additional information in affirming, modifying, or reversing the board's decision? And what kind of information would be available to him at that time?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, I'd like to point out that specifically on line 14 through 15, this only permits the commissioner to reconsider a decision by the board relating to the issuance, renewal, transfer, relocation, suspension, or revocation of a license. It does not give the commissioner the authority to veto regulations that have been adopted by the board. However, you know, in the circumstances where the commissioner is reviewing a decision of the board to issue or deny a license, for example, they have to only look at the record that was before the board. They can't go outside of that.
Okay. And then a second question?
Representative Kawasaki.
And then if the commissioner, I just want to figure out what the power of the commissioner would be in affirming would be essentially what rubber stamping what the board had done. And then the modifying and reversing, I guess the modifying, how would that be dealt with at the commissioner's level to modify a board's recommendation?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, my understanding is modifying would come into play when there may be multiple facets of the decision of the board, and so the commissioner could, affirm part, deny in part. They could make some changes to the decision in some way. That's where modifying would come into play.
And then just one more follow-up. When it talks about the based on the record before the board and the information that's presented to them, how much latitude can a commissioner have in the absence of presented information make a decision to modify a board's decision, in your opinion?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, I believe it would depend on the specific facts before the board and the factual circumstances.
Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So back to what Representative Kawasaki about distilleries, this amendment wouldn't help those folks at all because it wasn't attached to anybody renewing. It had to do with activity that they could do underneath their license.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, that's correct. This is a limited issue. Amendment. It doesn't cover any decision that they might happen to make, whether it's about cocktails or so on and so forth. So it specifically says what issues this can be appealed.
And a follow-up?
Representative Wilson?
And would this do anything if somebody had been fined or any of that portion, would they be able to go to the commissioner and give the reasons why they should not have been, or is it only has to do with issuance, renewal, transfer, relocation? Because it may have, so let's say I was doing a renewal, I said I had all my paperwork in, for some reason it got lost. Once it got to the board and they fined me $1,000 and I took all my stuff to the board said, well, we're going to go by the way we're stamped, you're still going to be charged $1,000. Is that something that could go to the commissioner?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, you mentioned a renewal issue, so technically, I guess it could be since it's a fine due to renewal, but again, that may be more of a legal question. But if someone goes to renew and they have an issue and then they get fined because they're supposedly late for the renewal, I can't really answer the details. But issuance, renewal, transfer, revocation, suspension. If a fine may fall under one of those, maybe it's. Applicable.
So the attorney, Mr. Chairman, so could you answer that question? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how, so I understand that it has to do with the issuance, renewal, transfer portions of that, but is it all portions of it, or do they have to, like, not renew it or not give me a new one to be able to go underneath the commissioner, or could it have to do with fines or maybe penalties that the board has put upon me that I don't agree with? Could those go to the commissioner? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how broad it is.
Ms. Bruce, are you there?
For the record, this is Linda Bruce with Legislative Legal Services. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I think that there may be some interpretation. This may be a little bit open to interpretation. However, that language that says by the board, a decision by the board relating to the issuance, renewal, transfer, relocation, suspension, or revocation of a license may make this a little bit broader than just if you've been issued the license or just if the license was renewed, to something relating to the issuance or the renewal of my license.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up.
Do you know, or does anyone else here know, how many in the last year or 2 years has not agreed with whatever the board has done and has actually gone and taken it to court? I mean, I know court's much more costly on, it costs you more than your fines do, and maybe that's one reason that we're doing this versus that, but do we even know how many have gone to that extent so we know what added burden we're going to be putting on the commissioner? Anybody who knows?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I don't know how many have gone to state superior court. My guess is not that many, but maybe that's a question for Erica McConnell, who I believe is still online.
Ms. McConnell, are you there? And if you are, if you could put yourself on the record.
For the record, this is Erica McConnell, Director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office.
Thank you. And did you hear the question okay?
I did hear the question. My recollection is that we have had one licensee appeal to court that I can think of in the past year, but I'd like to clarify a little bit about the appeal process, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Sure, go ahead, Ms. McConnell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's a very clear appeal process within the statute. So if a licensee is unhappy with a decision of the director or myself, they are authorized to appeal to the board. If a licensee is unhappy with a decision of the board, they appeal to the Office of Administrative Hearings, and they get a hearing before an administrative law judge. The administrative law judge establishes the record, holds a hearing, and makes a proposed decision. That proposed decision then goes back to the board for a final decision, and the board is authorized to agree with the administrative law judge's decision, disagree with the decision, or modify the decision. That becomes the final decision, and that is the decision that can then be appealed to superior court. So there is that intermediate step after a board decision of going to the administrative law judge.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Bruce, just to let you know, we adopted J.2. I don't know if you heard that. So we are taking out the precedent process from the decisions of the board, if this all passes. And it comes time for a renewal, and a renewal or a transfer or relocation or suspension happens because somebody with a license has been doing something that doesn't conform to the law, because they were doing it as it was traditionally done and as they were able to do. At that point forward, the license could be denied or transfer could be denied. And if it goes to the board and the board makes that decision, this doesn't conform to law, even though we've been doing that way before this. And then it goes to the commissioner and he affirms that. Is there an avenue for the licensee, the license holder, to have corrected something that was done the way it was always done and there was never a problem, but now the law has changed? Is there a way for them to readjust or a timeline or a process for them to adjust their business practices and the way they did things so they inside of this process or when it gets to them? Is that clear? I don't know.
For the record, this is Linda Bruce with Legislative Legal Services. Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, if I'm correct, your question is just, is there an alternative avenue for a licensee if they find that they've been doing something unlawfully?
Unlawfully, but as the way it had been done previous, which is no longer allowed.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I would defer that question to Erica McConnell. It may be that the board can temporarily suspend the license and then give the licensee time to conform to the new interpretation, but I would defer to her on that question.
Ms. McConnell?
Just, for the record, Erica McConnell, Director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. To the chair, Representative Guttenberg, when it is always our goal to consistently apply statute and regulation, and when we encounter a situation where it appears that the statute has not been correctly applied in the past, we do our best to work with the applicant or the licensee to bring them into compliance with the law. I believe there is court rulings that do relate to the amount of time that something that doesn't comply with statute has been allowed to go on, and basically the less time it's been allowed to go on, the easier it is to correct, but the longer that it's been allowed to go on improperly, the more difficult it is to correct. And I don't think there's a hard and fast time, but we do our best to try to work within the means that we are allowed to bring applicants and licensees into compliance with statute, and our goal is not to revoke, have their licenses revoked, but is to make sure that we are doing, we are applying statute as written.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions on Amendment Number 2? Representative Guerra.
Thanks, Chair. I like Amendment Number 2, though. For Ms. Bruce, she should probably know that we've all been given a memo to make sure we ask questions to make you remind you what it was like to take the bar exam. On the amendment itself, it's common for there to be a double layer of appeals within an agency, and I think this board deserves that double layer, has earned to have that double layer of an appeal. Even though this amendment doesn't address regulations like the no fun rule that's been imposed in distilleries and the rule that says now consumers have to mix their own drinks, which many of us have questions about, it's those same board members who are making these decisions in these individual cases, and I'm comfortable on having their decisions also be subject to an appeal to the commissioner. Representative Kawasaki asked, well, what's the basis for his decision? His decision has to be supported by substantial evidence. That's what the amendment says, and that's the common standard. So, and then if the commissioner gets it wrong in somebody's view, you can always appeal to the Superior Court. But I like the amendment. I like the double check in it. It's not uncommon within an agency to have a second layer of an appeal up higher inside the agency. And I've had enough questions about things that I've seen come out of this board that I don't mind having the commissioner, who will then have the attorney general at his or her disposal to review a decision on substantial evidence.
So. Thank you, Representative Guerra. Any further questions on Amendment Number 2? Seeing none, is the objection maintained?
I remove my objection.
The objection is removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, Amendment Number 2, which is J.1, has been adopted. And on to Amendment Number 3. By request of a sponsor, I will move Amendment Number 3.
Just for discussion.
And we have an objection. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment Number 3, I think, just removes the words for administrative purposes only, where the board, the full line is, the board is in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, but for administrative purposes only. And I feel it's important to remove that because right now we've added the appeal process, so it is not actually for administrative purposes only. So there's a more of a connection between the board and the department.
Thank you. And questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, is the objection maintained?
I have one more question. I'm sorry.
Your Representative Wilson.
So by changing this from administrative purposes to regulatory and quasi-judicial agency, besides what we see in these amendments, is there any other powers that are given because of this change of reference?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, no. The short answer is no. As I stated earlier today, the ABC board has resided in revenue, public safety, now commerce, and if it's just for administrative purposes, it could just as well be in DOT and it wouldn't make a difference. So I'm trying to have some connection to commerce, and I think that's why it was moved from public safety into commerce, because the licensees are businesses. And so whatever thin filament of connection can be sustained, I think is a good thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I remove my objection.
The objection is removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, Amendment Number 3, which is J.3, has been adopted. So that takes us back to the bill. And we'll go to fiscal notes, unless anybody has any more questions on the bill. Representative Wilson.
I have a question for Ms. Curtis.
And Ms. Curtis, if you could maybe come up and put yourself on the record, if one of you could maybe, thank you, Ms. Steidoff. Ms. Curtis.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't want her to sit here for no reason the entire time. But there was a lot of recommendations in his audit report, and now we've added other items, and I don't think any of these items actually help any of the issues, and maybe I'm wrong, of the eight issues that you put here. Do you see that any of these amendments will cause more issues or even help resolve any of the recommendations that you have in the report?
Representative Wilson, through the chair. The eight recommendations are not related in any way to the amendments. Your second question was, will any of these amendments create problems in the future?
Yes.
Through the chair, when we come back to review the board, we will use the 11 criteria that are identified in the appendix, and one of those has something to do with whether there's any, most of them are geared to whether the board is serving the public's interest. And while I'm listening to these amendments, I'm thinking to myself, how will the position of the commissioner relate to our review of the board? Whether he overturns or he or she overturn I'm not quite sure how, because if we don't agree with a decision, that doesn't relate to the board. So the actions by the commissioner, I don't believe, are going to be subject to our sunset review. And it is interesting that this is a quasi-judicial independent body. My understanding, the commissioner will now be able to veto the decision of an independent body, and the commissioner is a political appointee. So the sunset review process, I don't think the legislative oversight will have any ability to review the decisions by the commissioner.
Wow. One other question?
Representative Wilson.
So I'm assuming, which I probably shouldn't, but there's not even a way to add that into the, to something you would look at, just because currently it sits outside the board. That would be like a separate review that the legislature would have to look at if there was a lot of things that went to the commissioner and turned the board over. I mean, that just would be, those are just two complete things besides the audit and the sunset. So I'm assuming, too, then you're still okay with the 4 years on the sunset, since what we did today really didn't have to do with boards.
Through the chair, I'm comfortable with the recommended extension that is half of the maximum. And that's in regards to the eight recommendations. As far as looking at decisions, whether they're supported by evidence or anything like that, that would be probably a special audit request. It would go into the hopper. We would do first in, first out, and it may take a while to get to a review.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions on the bill, Representative Guttenberg, and then Pruitt?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. So obviously, based on the conversation that you've just had that we should have had an hour ago, before we started talking about this, we should have had you come up, I guess, because you kind of highlighted something that is, I think, very important based on what we've just passed. Is there any way to ask you now, and I understand that it's coming in 4 years, but maybe it's the placing the legislative intent, that when you do the sunset audit in 4 years, that you have as part of the conversation your analysis of whether or not the commissioner, as it's just basically him that we've given this authority to, is working alongside the stated goal of the commission, or whether or not there are actions that are being taken that are contrary to the commission. Is there a way to set up now that we want that to be analyzed at the same time that you are looking at the commission in 4 years for the sunset?
Through the chair, I'm not an expert on this, but there's uncodified. I know in the past that people legislature has put something in uncodified law that we look at something in a certain amount of time. I think you could do that, and it would prompt me to review it as part of the sunset process. An intent language may also work, and if I saw an intent language in there, I would bring it to the committee and probably have them put it on record to direct me to look at that.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just I don't know if it's timing, because I think we should have something. There should be something there, whether it's uncodified or intent, as she's just highlighted. We probably should give her direction to ensure that we don't have a commissioner, whether it's this commissioner or there's another commissioner, it doesn't matter, that is operating outside of what, you know, we feel the commission itself is tasked to do. So I don't know if, I don't really want to hold the bill up. Maybe it's a floor amendment, but we can talk about that. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
I know that Representative Guttenberg had a question, but on the same issue, Representative Wilson, did you have on this?
Well, I didn't expect the answers I got to the question. And so, I mean, I know we're meeting again tomorrow, and I'd want to make sure, I mean, this is something that I don't think we all, I'll speak for myself, that changing this over has some things that I didn't quite realize that would sit outside of the board and the audits that we have. And I don't want to just, if we want to put intent in, just kind of do it off the cuff, but you know, there's a possibility that, you know, up first tomorrow that we could have some kind of language and pass that would be nice, because I do think we need to make sure, I mean, it's fresh in our minds right now, but 4 years from now, we know that Representative Garrett won't be here because he'll only be here for two. we might want to make sure that there's language so that it does get looked at, because it may be a great idea and it may not be, but I would want to make sure that somebody's checking what we do. But that's your call, but I'd feel much more comfortable if we were able to just see what that would look like.
And on this issue, Representative Guerra.
Oh, Mr. Chair, so though I might stay 4 years just to monitor this one bill, Mr. Chair, I understand at some point you get near the end of session, and every time you slow a bill by a day, even though the sponsor doesn't look freaked out, the sponsor gets freaked out. And I think this is something that I would hope maybe those who have concerns could speak to the sponsor about. If there's a resolution that's needed before it hits the floor, maybe they can work on it. But we had an amendment deadline on this bill. Only because it's so late in session, I would rather not hold this in committee. We had three amendments. We voted on them. Folks can vote on the bill how they want as we try and move it out of committee. But I would not want to hold this with still so many bills sitting in this committee for another day.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. Maybe let's stay on this issue. And so Representative Wool and then Commissioner Navarre.
Oh, I was, Mr. Chair, I was just, Commissioner Navarre was trying to speak.
So Commissioner,
I was, Commissioner? Alerting you to that.
thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I have not had a chance to discuss this with the director of the division. I've not had a chance to discuss it with the Department of Law, but I fully intend to engage them. I don't think I can possibly do that by tomorrow under any circumstances, but will before the bill hits the floor and provide the information to the members of this committee and the sponsor.
Thank you. Representative Wool, do you have any comments on that?
Well, I think some comments that Ms. Curtis made about political appointees, I think the director of the ABC board is also a political appointee as well. They make a lot of decisions that affect a lot of people. I'm curious, as the admin judge, their first appeal process goes to an administrative law judge. And I don't know if that falls under the purview of legislative audits. In other words, I know you said audits don't involve anything at the commissioner level, but if do the audits of the board include the appeals to the administrative law judge, I guess would be my first question to Ms. Curtis.
Ms. Curtis?
Representative Bull, through the chair, we can, when we're looking at the resolution of a case, say timeliness of an investigation, we can and have looked at administrative law decisions, but knowing that that's an independent process, but mainly we're looking at how does the board react to that independent decision? Do they reverse it, or in what type of support do they have? So that would be our analysis.
Follow up, Representative Wolf.
Well, so I guess in your past audit, you did not look into the decisions made by the administrative law judge as to whether they supported the board or didn't support the board or how many there were, et cetera.
Through the chair, no, we don't look at the administrative law judge, but we look at the timeliness of the investigative process, which is a criteria that we're used that is specified in our criteria for looking at. Mainly our focus is whether the board is serving the public's interest, and that would be the main focus of the sunset process.
Representative Gutenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Curtis, I have a question about your recommendation number two. The board shall issue recreational license, site recreational licenses in accordance with statutory requirements. And you recommend that they only, that the board only issues site licenses in accordance with statutory requirements. And the non-compliant licenses were travel tour companies, bowling alleys, art council, a pool hall, movie theater, spa. There's a situation in Fairbanks where the Fairbanks Drama Association uses a bar's, uses a bar's license to sell alcohol like a half hour before their performance, and it's like $50 for every performance. And if the same thing, the same processes holds true, for what I understand, with the the Performing Arts Center in Anchorage. So if they live up to the recommendation here, would neither of those places be able to have a recreational site license to serve during their performances?
Through the chair, what you've described is a bar with a license mm-hmm. serving alcohol. And you may know more than that than I know.
If I may, thank you. Through the chair, Representative Gutenberg, I think, and Erica McConnell, I'm sure, can correct me if I'm wrong. You're talking about there's three different things going on right now. One is a catering permit, which a bar can cater their license to the theater, which is, I believe, what's happening in Fairbanks. They pay per event. There's a recreational site license, which is entirely different, which is for like certain sporting events and such. And this recommendation says they kind of went out of the definition of what that's supposed to be. Performing Arts Center, I believe, has what's called a theater license. There's 22 types of licenses. It gets complicated. That's why people think, well, they're doing it this way. Why can't I do it that way? And there's so many licenses and so many. And Title IV is attempting, I think, to clean up some of it, although there's still 22 or 24 licenses. So, but the catering permit in Fairbanks is different than recreational site license, which is different than a theater license, which the Performing Arts Center is able to use. Again, they have to get a catering permit from an established beverage person, but they can keep it there for the whole season, but means they have to do every show. And Erica McConnell can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's what it was.
If I can, Ms. McConnell, I know the Fairbanks Drama Association has been in touch with you because they don't get to do it for the whole season. They have to do it by show. And I'm wondering if I have my information wrong or trying to get a resolution on this for them over the years.
Through the chair, Representative Gutenberg, Representative Wohl was 99% correct. His last statement about the catering permit at the PAC in Anchorage was incorrect. But we have encouraged the Fairbanks Drama Association to apply for a theater license, which exists currently in regulations, but they need to partner with a beverage dispensary licensee who would then have the permission consistently to serve at the theater, the location of the theater, which is of course not the location of the beverage dispensary. And that is what is happening in Anchorage at the Performing Arts Center, and for the Fairbanks Drama Association to apply for this for a theater license.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just back to the bill, I just wanted to state that I don't really have a problem moving the bill along at this point in time. I think we heard from the commissioner it would take him a longer time than if we had this bill up tomorrow. And I recognize that we have a board extension that needs to go through. and we have 8 days left before session ends. And so I don't have a problem having this bill moved with my recommendation that I might amend it at a later time. I think it'll give comfort to the sponsor of the bill, as well as Ms. McConnell, and so that's where I'm at. I'd like to see the bill just moved at this point. And then if we have questions further, we can connect back with the director and commissioner.
Thank you. Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Chair, on that point, in terms of the timing and discussion of potentially looking to add the uncodified or intent language, I think the commissioner had stated that he wouldn't have enough time to talk to some of his personnel, and I recognize that concern. I don't know, though, if there would necessarily need, be a need for him to talk to him if this is really more related to the audit, ensuring that our audit analyzes some of the actions that could be taken by the commissioner or by his people. And secondarily, I think in terms of timing, unless this bill is going to be on a session that we would have tomorrow, and I'm not 1,000% sure whether or not that session would be taking place, well, the likelihood is we're talking about a Monday or Tuesday. I believe we have, though, a meeting here in finance tomorrow. And so if the earliest that it could be on a Monday or a Tuesday, then we might just be in that position to tonight ask for some of that language for an amendment. And then first thing, as mentioned by the member from North Pole, we could try to address that first thing in, tomorrow. So that's just for conversation. I mean, I guess the committee can debate that, but this might be the place to handle that since we're aware of the conversation that has just been had, and our colleagues on the floor might not be aware of kind of all the intricacies that we've been discussing here.
Thank you, Representative Pruitt. Representative Wohl, I understand. I think you're gone tonight. is that correct? I mean, I don't want to keep you here.
Representative Foster, I do have a ticket.
And giving you more time is also a consideration in terms of if we were to move it out and then have you do this. So we could either try and take this up tomorrow or let you we pass it out, work it through the process. I'm just putting everything on the table. I was inclined to say let's wait till tomorrow, but there's a lot of things going on here. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my first choice would be to move it out today. My second choice would probably be tomorrow. I think the board, this bill is of a timely nature. It has to go through the other body. It's a board extension. It needs to be done. I in no way want to hold it up. I did want to amend it because of different situations, and I use the Alaska Airlines as an example, and I think that decision is still pending from what I'm told, and I'm in no way picking on the board or Ms. McConnell, but I just in the letter I just wanted to point out a small detail, which was the Alaska Airlines renewal form was sent before the end of the year because they refer to a December 29 letter. So they sent in all their paperwork, all their forms, and then they were informed later that they needed the fingerprints of 20 or so vice presidents, and that's when this exchange started, where they felt that they didn't need to do that because in the past they hadn't done it, and so on and so forth. And the response was, I'm sorry, the statute is thus, and that's it. And by the way, since you haven't completed your application before our deadline, we're going to fine you another $10,500, and I have no way to waive that penalty. And as someone that's been in a similar situation, you provide your paperwork on time, and then you get into a disagreement or a discrepancy about what's needed, and you enter into conversation via letter, et cetera, and then they say, well, it's not complete. We're going to fine you for not having it in on time. And as a business owner, I had to have a hard time with that. I mean, Alaska Airlines can probably afford $10,000, but you know, maybe Joe's Bar and Grill might be a little harder, and especially if they have to close because their license is suspended. Now, if I fly in Alaska Airlines next month and I can't get a glass of red wine, not the end of the world. They'll still stay in business, but it affects different people differently. So I guess, you know, I whatever appeal process there could be to expedite it. I don't know, the administrative law route that was mentioned. I don't know how long that takes. Maybe Ms. McConnell can answer to that. And, you know, if that takes 2 months or 3 months of waiting and, you know, going back to the board meets every 3 months. So if you have to wait a couple board cycles, that's a while. And again, Ms. McConnell, if I'm off on the frequency of board meetings, I'm sorry. But, you know, these things take months and months. In a small business, that could mean closing. And so I guess my desire was to make the board responsive to serve the public, as was mentioned. And if you're a public business, if you're Alaska Airlines, if you're, you know, the Alaska Grill, I think it all applies. And I'd like to see, you know, another set of eyes when needed that can apply a different purview, a different perspective, say, than a law enforcement or a prosecutorial point of view.
Okay, before we go to questions from Representative Guerra and Wilson, Ms. Erica McConnell, did you have any comments?
Through the chair, Representative Wall asked about the time for an administrative law judge to hold a hearing on a case, and that does take several months. I have no other comments on his statements.
Thank you. Representative Guerra and then Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I understand it correctly, there's a concern that now you have a commissioner making a decision, legislative budget and audit doesn't review commissioner decisions. I don't really have that concern. The legislative budget and audit also doesn't review Superior Court decisions or Supreme Court decisions. And I don't really have an interest personally in expanding the role of legislative budget and audit. Or else we're going to have to it's just not something – it seems to go beyond the purview of this bill and to expand their role for just the purview of this bill would cause me some concern. I would rather just move the bill along as it is and have the new questions addressed as the bill goes along through the many more the two floors and more committees that it's going to go through.
Thank you, Representative Kerr. Representative Wilson.
So, you know, we were told the amendments were due. There was no way that we would have known that these amendments were coming before us until they did, and some of the change that we learned today. I'm not saying I disagree at all with what we put in here, but what I think we have to be responsible for, one, they didn't have a very good audit to start with, so there's already issues. Whether we like it or not, I mean, there was over 8 recommendations. I only got a 4-year review. We've done a bunch of boards where they've got 8 years and they've had flawless, basically, audits. So there's already a problem here. Is this the right – and this is new. I mean, we kind of punished, in my opinion, the pharmacy board for things that we added to the pharmacy board, and then we only gave them like a 6-year extension, although we gave them a whole bunch more duties. So we're doing the same thing here. We're changing how things have been done. And I think, you know, it's all we're asking is till tomorrow at 1 to have language put in so that we're just giving, because it's new, we want to make sure it's working. I don't think it'll need to do it more than once because it'll be 4 years from now to find out whether or not this worked or not. But I think we do need to be careful, though. I know Alaska Air is having an issue, but I want to make sure that the public realizes that this is not about one entity. They happen to be the forefront right now because of just what has happened. But there's been other issues, as the audit has shown, with compliance, with making sure complaints are filled in. I mean, there's a lot of things in. And this is a board extension, so that's why I'm referring to that. I think getting it right and sending a better bill to the floor than all of a sudden going to the floor and having 5 or 6 amendments trying to then explain it to 40 others will make it much more difficult because it is a board extension. And I don't think – I know I want to see the extension go forward. And if we were talking about that we couldn't hear this until next week sometime, then I would just move it along and do that. But I don't think, approximately 12 hours is going to make or break it. I think Representative Wool can still go home. I think he's got a very good aide, and we have email that we can send it to him so he can see it beforehand. But I think sending a good bill out of here will make it go easier across the floor. And I think that's really what we want to see as it goes to the other side. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Who would be working on the language?
I'd be more than happy to work with
either one of us. Yeah.
Okay. Next up, I have Representative Pruitt and then Seaton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think we need to make clear that because of these amendments, as well as two other this is not just an board extension. This is not like when we normally have a one line that says that we're changing the date from this current year to a future year. This has – there's some policy conversations related to the organization and running of the board. So it's going to have more debate than a typical board extension would usually have. I think that if we were to hold off and have the committee work done on the floor, the potential is you'd actually have a larger delay than we're even talking about right now. We're asking, let's bring it forward tomorrow so we can do it with the committee. Because I think to the point that the member from North Pole just highlighted, if we start saying we have a concern with the board extension and we want to add some amendments, trying to make sure that everyone understands that conversation on the floor, not having participated with us, will take time. There might not be a desire to move move it through in one day. We could see a delay over a couple days. So I think it might be appropriate to deal with it here. And the last thing I'd highlight is the member from downtown had mentioned we do not have ledge badge and audit review Superior Court cases. I agree with that point. But in this particular case, we have changed where before the board itself was what we were analyzing. We've now thrown these powers to a commissioner. And essentially, the inability from the auditors to be able to analyze whether or not they are acting within, I think, what everyone wants the board to fall under. We want the decisions to fall within the realm of that board. I think it kind of necessitates having that conversation. It necessitates saying, is the commissioner also following within the guidelines that we've put out there for the board, and hence why this is – it's worth the day's delay. I don't believe it'll delay it, though, on the floor. I really think this will actually help move it faster if we go ahead and take care of it sooner than later, but do it through the committee process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pruitt. And I know we've got a comment from Representative Seaton. I just wanted to say this bill has to be over to Senate Finance by Wednesday. And so tomorrow is the latest that we can move this, which also means that we can wait until tomorrow to move this. We are constantly telling the committees below us when they send bills up to us, do your work, do a good job, don't send it to finance and expect us to fix everything. I hate to advance this knowing that we have an issue that may or may not be adopted, but whether we do or we don't, we at least need to hash that out, see the language. So I don't want to do that to the next body that is coming after us. I want to have a good process, and so I would say that I think that the sponsor has a great staff. I think he can still do what he needs to do, take care of business, and we can get this taken care of and get this out of here by tomorrow. So, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And generally, I think of intent language in the bill relating to the intention of what we have in the bill. And here we have a intent that is talking to the Ms. Curtis of what we want to see looked at in the next audit. And so I think I wanted to ask Ms. Curtis, if we do a letter of intent that accompanies the bill that says we want the auditor to look at those things, does that inform you as well as trying to put something in statutory language, even if it would be uncodified law? Does that give you as much indication of what to do in the next audit?
Through the chair. Yes, I would bring that to the LBNA committee, though, and that would I would take that direction from the committee. If it comes an audit uncodified law, I don't have to take the direction from the committee. Comes to mind, I believe the last midwives, maybe one or two times ago, had it in uncodified law, because that would be a good example if you wanted to go uncodified law, or a letter. If I got a letter, I would take it to the committee and ask them to bless it.
Good. Thank you. And I just you know, putting an uncodified law that doesn't relate to the law that we're passing seems to be a little more more likely to be stripped out by the other body. The other body doesn't has generally not liked to have intent language that is kind of superfluous in there, though letters of intent of talking, of telling the auditor what we want them to do is something that I think that might be a very appropriate way, and I don't think that would be objectionable to the other body, because we've had this problem in the past of intent language put in uncodified sections, especially if they don't directly relate to what we mean by the amendments that we put in the bill, can be problematic and could fall out. So that's just my suggestion, that we consider that as people are drafting this. And so thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Regardless of what we do, I think there's just let people kind of absorb it and think about it tonight. And whether we move forward with that or not, I think let's just be deliberate about this. And so with that, we will have that issue come up first thing tomorrow. And also we'll read in the fiscal notes, and we'll go from there. So with that, is there anything else to come for the committee? Seeing none, we'll set aside HB 299. And tomorrow we will continue this meeting Saturday, April 7th at 1 p.m. We will be taking up first thing HB 299, and then after that HB 322, which is oil spills, pollution penalties, and then HB 316, restrict access to marijuana crime records, and then HB 158, which is oil hazardous substance cleanup and reimbursement, and finally HB 268, which is opioid prescription information. So with that, we will be recessed to tomorrow at 1 p.m. Saturday, April 7th, and at the time is currently 3:37 p.m. Thank you.